This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It is episode 166. It is a gorgeous day in the Ozarks today. It's been warm, which is to be expected. This is the Ozarks, and we are crowding up to summer, which I guess summer has officially begun because we're past the Memorial Day weekend. But today, right now, at 5 o'clock in the early evening, it is 65 degrees in the Ozarks. Gotta love the Ozarks weather. The old saying around here is, if you don't like the weather, just wait 15 minutes. So it's gorgeous today. In fact, some would say it's a little on the cool side, but you know what? We'll take as many days like this as we can get, because summer is coming. Things are a bit warm around here in the summer. I've still got a little of the junk cold stuff. I'm just not quite through it. So I may be clearing my throat and snortling a little bit. I do apologize for that in advance. Hopefully that won't happen too much. It's been an exciting week at work. It's going to be very, very interesting to see how this all works out. Because it's just going to be interesting. You know, my time at my major client may be coming to an end after 11, 12 years. But if it is, that's okay. You know, all things come to an end. Things move on. We grow up. We move on. It's fine. It's fine. There is nothing to fear. That's one of the big lines out of the current book that I'm finishing up today. That's the other thing, is I've been working on Grumpy Old Prophets and reading through it, and I think we're in pretty good shape. And so I just have the few little extra tweaks that I wanted to make. The last chapter isn't quite right yet, but I know, I think, what needs to be done to kind of tweak that out a little bit. And then I need to do a full read tomorrow. Another couple of tweaks. And then I think I'm good to go in terms of sending it off, getting the proof, approving the proof. Done. Order the beta copies. So that's good. And then I already have, I think, 15, 16, 17, 18, somewhere in there, beta readers that are lined up. And so, you know, I just have to find another 20 or so, which usually isn't too hard. I'll just get on Facebook and alert my friends to it and have them come, you know, order books. And then we'll go from there. So, see what the beta readers have to say about that. And then as soon as I have that underway, it will be time to get working on the next book, which is acting. And I actually had some extra time today when I was sort of betwixt and between, so I went off the clock. And I was talking to my boss's boss today for a little bit about the ideas that are coming up in the next book. And he was intrigued, which I hope people will be. I hope they will be intrigued by my perspective. So we'll see. Should be interesting. Aside from that, I don't know if there's much else that's been going on this week. It's been a pretty quiet week. I didn't get together with my buddy on Tuesday. He had been on vacation, wasn't sure he was back yet. Didn't get together with my buddy on Wednesday, because he just bought a house, and so he's going to be doing a lot of moving over the next few weeks. So I don't think we're getting together until in July sometime after he gets moved. I did get together with my godson, who I helped drive out to California. He was back in town for a couple of weeks. And so we got together for breakfast, had a nice breakfast together. Just talked about this, that, and the other. Talked about the creative process and how how the creative process fits within the structures that have developed over time for the marketing of the creative process, and where do you fit in that whole thing? How much do you get involved with the machine? That's going to be interesting to see how things work out for him. I was telling him that for myself, I'm just really not that interested in being involved in the machine. I would rather just sit in my basement by my little self and do my thing how and when that I'd like to do it, and just let it grow organically wherever it's going to grow. And if people want to hear the things I'm saying, fine, but just the fact that I write these books for myself gives me lots of joy, and it actually teaches me things. In the process of writing Grumpy Old Prophets Part 4, which is book 3, just to keep things confusing, I think I personally have learned some really interesting things just writing this book. So I don't know if that will be apparent to other people when they read it, but I enjoyed writing it because it gave me a whole new perspective on what Christ did for us during Easter, during what we call the Passion of the Christ. So it's good. And I've been thinking about all of that, and it's good. So now we'll see what happens with the Acts of the Apostles, next book, and then we're done with this series. And it'll be interesting to see what happens after that, because there's so much that's applicable in the Grumpy Old Prophet series in terms of life lessons and things, because you're dealing right side by side with Scripture, that it's going to be interesting then to swing back out into pure fiction and see where that goes. I mean, I love pure fiction. I don't know. We'll see. It's really birthed a desire in me working on the Grumpy Old Prophet series, because in that, every so often, it just keeps turning around, giving people something that maybe they haven't thought of before about Christ and relating to Christ and life and all that kind of stuff, where with a series like Realmers, which is potentially the next series I'm going to get started on, there's only going to be probably one core idea per book, and the rest of it is going to be there just to keep people entertained so that they might open up and hear the one core idea that I have to give them. So we'll see. We'll see. Just one step at a time. It's an adventure. We'll see where that goes. Anyways, this week, I'm still puttering along reading the Power of Habit book, and frankly, I haven't been reading at it fast, because for a while my Kindle was in my computer bag, and I finally got it out of my computer bag and back into my reading room. But even when it's been there, for some reason, I haven't been picking it up. So I just need to get that picked up, get that book finished, because there is a lot of interesting stuff in there. There was another article that I may talk about next week that I came across called The Perfected Self. And it was about B.F. Skinner's behavioral modification techniques and how they are being applied to help people lose weight and keep it off, along with a host of other things. That was a pretty interesting article. But I just didn't feel like I was quite ready to talk about it. I also came across an article and a TED Talk, which, as you know, I love TED Talks. Came across a TED Talk called The Demise of Guys. And in conjunction with the TED Talk, there was also a CNN opinion blog on it, also called The Demise of Guys. And I guess the author of the talk, plus additionally a female artist slash commentator on life, have done a book now that's been put out by TED Books called The Demise of Guys. So this was pretty interesting, and they were talking about the fact that there is a continuing skew in the average normal American guy's ability to function socially within our culture, in what we would traditionally call normal ways. And the author of this TED Talk started spouting off a lot of reasons that he feels that guys might be on the decline and might actually be under demise, under a demise. And I'll just give you some of the things he talked about because it's pretty interesting. He claims that guys, in his words, are flaming out academically and that they are wiping out socially with girls and sexually with women. Now, what he considers to be sexually successful with women, I have no idea. But these are his words. The statistics that he was quoting to support these suppositions, or this position, was that boys are 30% more likely to drop out of school than girls. That in Canada, 5 boys drop out for every 3 girls, which, if I'm doing my math correctly, I think in Canada that means that they're 40% more likely, I think. I don't know. I'd have to run the numbers and make sure. Is that 40? I don't know. Anyway, they're 40. No, maybe it's higher than that. Maybe it's 66% more. I don't know. Anyways, every 5 boys that drop out, only 3 girls drop out from school. And this is from elementary school to graduate school. This is the people dropping out. He said there's a 10% differential between getting BAs and all graduate programs with guys falling behind girls. So for every 100 girls that are graduating from college and... is that right, gals, that there's only 90 graduating? Says two-thirds of all students in special ed remedial programs are guys. Two-thirds. And boys are 5 times more likely to be labeled as having attention deficit disorder. And he said, and therefore we drug them with Ritalin, which is an interesting approach that could be discussed, but we won't today. He also talked about what he considers to be the evidence of the fact that boys are wiping out socially with girls. And he had a nice way of saying it, and he got a laugh in the TED Talk because it was a really nice way of saying it. He said intimacy, he was saying that guys are developing problems with intimacy, and by his definition, intimacy means physical, emotional connection with somebody else, and especially with somebody of the opposite sex who gives off ambiguous, contradictory, and phosphorescent signals. And I love that little last phrase, phosphorescent signals. Now then, okay, so what does he attribute this to? Well, I'm sorry, before we talk about that, there's a couple of things also that he claims that guys are having trouble with now. And that is shyness is on the increase, according to him. according to how guys comment about themselves. And what he's saying is that guys are developing more social awkwardness, that they don't know what to do, especially one-on-one with the opposite sex, and that they don't know the language of face-to-face contact. You know, the nonverbal set of rules that when you're face-to-face with somebody and you're talking, they don't know that well. And he said, what this all boils down to is that men more and more and guys more and more are preferring the asynchronous internet world to the spontaneous interaction of social relationships. In other words, they would rather tweet when they want to, do their Facebook updates when they want to, respond to emails when they want to, text when they want to, and then do whatever else they want to when they want to, as opposed to having to sit across from someone face to face and have a conversation. Now then, the question then is, okay, so what does he attribute this to? What is causing this? And I happen to agree with what he thinks is causing it. First of all, it's excessive internet use in general, because with the internet, you get to do mostly what you want when you want. Now, you can do things like video chat, but video chat once again puts you into this need for face-to-face contact. But even in video chatting, I mean, I've video chatted with a person and I'm trying to have a conversation with them and they're looking over at another portion of their screen because I know they've got a browser up or something that they're working on. It's also excessive video gaming. And while there is certainly the whole social aspect of video gaming is big, you know, people getting on and playing each other in the evenings, that is big. And you might be playing with somebody who is your friend. It is different because you can bail out from them anytime you want to, and basically you can say anything that you want to them. And no one is going to force you to continue to have the conversation. So it is a little different. Also, one of the big things that he's talking about is the pervasiveness both of the production and of the consumption of porn. Because the internet gives everybody access to pretty much as much porn as you want. And there does seem to be a deleterious effect in the constant consumption of porn. One moment, I'm getting my mail. Okay, we're good. What he bundled them all into was what he called arousal addictions. And I wasn't really sure about his definition of arousal addictions. He said typically with drug addictions, what happens is you start getting acclimated to the drug, and so you need larger and larger doses. In his idea, an arousal addiction is just something that you need always something new. You don't want the same thing, more of the same thing over and over, but you need something new. And of course, the industry is going to supply this. I'm backing into my garage. He had all sorts of interesting statistics on the industry and how the various industries are supplying the need for something new. He quoted Jane McGonigal, who did a TED Talk that I think I did a podcast on several years ago. She says that by the time a boy is 21, he has played 10,000 hours of video games, most of that in isolation. And he quoted Cindy Gallup as saying that men don't know the difference between making love and doing porn, which, of course, there is a difference. He was saying, this was like, wow, really? The average boy now watches 50 porn clips a week. And here's the really interesting one. Porn, the porn industry, is the fastest growing industry in America. It is now $15 billion annually. Billion with a B. That for every 400 movies made in Hollywood, there are now 11,000 porn videos made. 400 movies in Hollywood, 11,000 porn videos. I mean, now, I grant you, I haven't watched them, but I'll guarantee you that they're not very good quality. What this particular psychologist is concerned about is that boys' minds, in his terms, are being digitally rewired. A totally new way for change, novelty, excitement, and constant arousal. And he thinks that's where the problem lies, and that what should happen is we should stop this trend, and we should start reversing it, and we should try. And my comment with all of this is, that's not going to happen. Because you're not going to limit the porn industry. It's not going to stop. You're not going to stop the gaming. And frankly, the flesh loves this because one of our basic rules here is anything that leads you to isolation is driven by the flesh. And what I see happening when people are constantly involved in the internet in this asynchronous way, i.e. not having face-to-face conversations but getting to do what they want when they do it, that's just pandering to the flesh because the idea is that, well, I get to do what I want to do when I want to do it. I only want to do the things that are convenient for me. That's flesh. And certainly if you're just sitting for hours and hours on end playing video games, not conversing with anyone else, just being entertained, it's just the same as sitting for hours and hours on end just watching TV. Or playing Facebook or whatever. All it means is that you're doing what you want when you want to do it, and it's just whatever's convenient with you. And certainly, watching porn gives you an idea about the world that is not true and allows you, again, to do what you want, when you want, in the way that you want, being accountable to no one. And all of that just feeds the flesh. And the only way that we're going to get a handle on any of this is if each individual guy decides that life is more than simply getting what he wants when he wants it. And comes to an understanding that ultimately that is not a strategy for success. That ultimately there's going to be a price to pay for that down the road. But with the way our society is configured, I just don't see any way that that necessarily is going to change anytime soon. Because it's the draw of me first, I do it my way. It's the draw of the flesh, and all I see is that the flesh is just going to keep drawing people down. Now, there obviously, there's always those who determine that there's more in life than this. The Olympics is coming up. I can guarantee you that none of those Olympians is completely consumed with gaming. They might game a little bit. They might watch some porn. But there's a whole section of their life where they dedicate themselves to learning this skill. And to do that, they have a coach, they have other people there around. There's at least something that is outside the digital world that they're experiencing. And certainly there are people in the world who have learned that the greatest parts of life are when you're in relationship and experiencing relationships with other. But it seems to me that our society is very much built on the consumer model. And we need, in our society, to continue to grow, to have people be consumers. Whether it's consumers... Sorry, I should have wrapped this up a couple of minutes ago, and then I would have been fine. Whether it's being consumers of websites or games or porn or food or drugs or alcohol or fashion or electronics. The whole engine of our society is built on consumerism. How much will we buy coming up? And it's going to be very interesting to see how that tension all plays out in the future. Because if your whole focus as a society is on consuming stuff, I've said for many years that whatever you consume eventually consumes you, if your whole focus is in that. So where does that put our society from a long-term perspective? It's going to be fascinating to watch. But there is one thing that I know that is one of those sub-themes of the current book that I'm working on, and that is there is nothing to fear because God will help us through this whole thing as individuals. And where we go as a society, I don't know. All I know is how to create a success, an environment of success for myself and hopefully for the people around me. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.